The Atlanta Braves have made moves to get financial flexibility for free agency, and here are the guys they're going to spend that money on. Yes, welcome on in to Braves Today for Thursday, November 7th, your source of news, notes, and updates on your Atlanta Braves. I'm your host, Lindsey Crosby. Follow me on Twitter at Crosby Baseball. You can follow the show on Twitter at Braves_today. We have a Facebook page and Instagram as well. And this podcast is also a newsletter. BravesToday.com is the Braves Today Substack. And we teased this a little bit yesterday, but we are going to go through the MLB trade rumors top 50 free agents and look at who Atlanta should be interested in to sign. We're going to use all of the reporting we have on interest for Atlanta, the needs that they have, and the trends for this organization when it comes to signing guys in free agency. So, again, this is the MLB Trade Rumors Top 50 MLB Free Agent list. We're going to use their contract projections as well. These are not my contract projections, so don't get mad at me if you think a dude's over or underpaid. Tomorrow is going to be the same version of this show, but with trade candidates. So if or when, let's be honest, when Atlanta makes a trade this offseason, because we know what AA is all about, these are the guys who we expect him to be interested in and try to target in trades. But today is free agents. And you don't have to have a list published by somebody to understand the number one free agent on the market is outfielder Juan Soto, right? This is going to be a generational free agency. Now, there are many reasons why it does not make sense for the Atlanta Braves to sign Juan Soto. And in fact, of the teams that we have heard or we have been told, whether it's John Heyman of MLB Network or other places that have checked in on Juan Soto, the Braves have not been reported as one of those teams. And if you think about it, as much as any team in baseball would be improved by adding Juan Soto to their offense, there's a lot of reasons why it makes sense that Atlanta would not have checked in on Juan Soto. He is repped by Scott Boras. His primary position is right field. Now, can he play left field? He did that in San Diego. This is the type of player you move things around for, right? But he's also the projection here. 13 years, $600 million. And reportedly, their goal is to beat $44 million a year, which is would put him just $300,000 over Shohei Ohtani's deferral adjusted value of $43.7 million a year. It's the net present value per year of Shohei's deal, according to the Players Association. Obviously, Atlanta's biggest deal would be the biggest deal in franchise history by dollars. It would be double the largest annual average value on the roster. $22 million is the self-imposed threshold that the team so far has not gone over on a multi-year deal. I'll remind folks, the reported Freddie Freeman deal was for more than $22 million a year. The reported Aaron Nola deal was for more than $22 million a year, although AA told us that reporting was not entirely accurate without getting into specifics. And Josh Donaldson did sign a one-year deal for $23 million in 2019. But on the current roster, nobody has signed for more than $22 million. Nobody repped by Scott Boras either. So there's a couple reasons why it doesn't feel like Soto is a likely move for the Braves. It's probably worth moving on. Number two on the list, Corbin Burnes. A lot of similar situations there, right? You've got Scott Boras. You've got the expected deal, 7 years, $200 million. Takes you over that $22 million. Some people think he could possibly get $250. Also, he has a qualifying offer, and it's important to understand the qualifying offer means that Atlanta would lose two draft picks because they're a CBT payer. They would lose the second and fifth highest selections in next year's draft, plus $1 million in international bonus pool space if they sign a player with a qualifying offer. And the thing here on players with qualifying, the thing here with international free agency for the Braves, what they have done since the sanctions ended is they like to get involved at the top of the market for one of the top international free agents and then fill the rest of the class with low dollar signings. Now, with them shaking up international free agency somewhat through signing a new assistant GM, we don't know if that's going to change. But in November, with the next international signing period opening in January, it is unlikely that Atlanta makes significant changes to their international strategy with 2 months to go. So I would be, it feels incredibly likely they will follow the same strategy. And in with that strategy, you don't want to lose $1 million from your bonus pool. So there you go. It feels unlikely a qualifying offer guy will get signed. So we can move on from Corbin Burnes. Alex Bregman is number 3 of the Astros. Lots of reasons to move on here, whether it's the qualifying offer, whether it's the fact he plays third base and then can play first base, and you have Riley and Olson. Let's move on. Number 4 is Blake Snell. No qualifying offer, so you've got that going for you. But, one, is a Boris guy, and two, the size of the deal probably precludes Atlanta from getting involved. $160 million over 5 years is $32 million AAV. That is, again, $10 million more than anybody else on the roster would be making. And I'm not saying Atlanta's never going to go over that amount. It will happen. But I feel like going over that amount is a big deal. Is Blake Snell the guy you do that for? I don't think it is. I think you get a lot of large payroll, big money teams, the Mets, the Red Sox, the Dodgers, teams like that, the Padres going for Snell. I don't see Snell coming to Atlanta. Willy Adames is number 5, and this is really interesting here, okay? 6 years, 160 is the prediction. This puts you at 26.6. That is over $22 million, obviously. But Willy Adames does a lot of things that the Braves like. He hit 32 home runs this year. He's hit 30 home runs in 2 of the last 3 years, which I do think is a big deal for the Braves. They're a team, they love slugging, they love power. The home run production is obviously tempting. Now, at the same time, Willy Adames is not just doing this off of raw exit velocity. His average exit velo is below average, actually, believe it or not. His hard hit rate is just at average, 52nd percentile at 40%. Now, he's very good at getting barrels, 12% barrel rate this year, 12.2% over the last 4 years, but he's not just doing this by making optimal contact, not by making incredibly hard contact, right? His chase rate's just average. He took a step back defensively this year. He also ran a lot more. Not necessarily sure, like, outs above average had him at 0. DRS had him at minus 16. So Atlanta does prioritize defense, right? Obviously, he's the complete package. He's going to be pursued by a lot of teams. I ultimately don't think, because of the qualifying offer, because of their preference for strong defense from shortstop, and just the number of teams that are going to be looking for an upgrade, I don't think they go for Willy Adames at the top of the market. Ha-Seong Kim? Maybe. We'll get to him on this list. I don't know if Willy Adames is the pick. Number 6 is Max Fried on this list. We all want Max Fried to come back. I think at this point, if Max Fried was going to come back, you would have already signed Max Fried, right? Atlanta definitely wants Max Fried here. They don't want to see him leave. But again, you would have signed him had, if you were going to sign him, you would have already done it, right? At this point, you are bidding in free agency. The odds are that somebody outbids you for Max Fried. They've got the deal at 6 years, $156 million, $26 million a year. I think Fried having been here, if you're going to go over $22 million, Max Fried's not a bad guy to do it for. I just don't know if they do or not. Pete Alonso, number 7. obviously doesn't make sense here. He's first base in DH. You have Matt Olson. Doesn't make a lot of sense. You're not going to see Pete Alonso here. Jack Flaherty, 5 years, $115 million as a right-handed starter. That's $23 million a year. I feel like that's a little bit low. I think he'll get more, but we'll see what happens here. It's possible that Atlanta looks at him. He did not get a qualifying offer. He was not eligible. He got traded midseason. If a guy gets traded mid-year, you can't give him a qualifying offer. So it's possible Atlanta checks in on Flaherty. I feel like he might go back to the Dodgers. I feel like he might, the Yankees might try to sign him. The same teams that are in on Corbin Burns and Blake Snell and Max Fried feel like they're going to be in for Jack Flaherty. I don't know if they make this happen. I think it's possible. I don't know. Anthony Santander, 4 years, $80 million is the projection. The outfielder hit 44 homers, 102 runs, switch hitter, corner outfielder. He's not great defensively. And this is something, to me, he's a left fielder, right? His range isn't great. His arm is above average, but he's not super accurate. This is something where I see Anthony Santander, if Atlanta signs him, and the deal, 4 years, $80 million, is $20 million a year. It's within your price range. He is in the outfield this year, and then he moves to your DH spot once Marcell Ozuna is gone, assuming you don't re-sign Ozuna for another year. I don't know if Atlanta makes this move. We've seen no reports on this. Also, qualifying offer for Anthony Santander. A little bit depressing there, but I could see a scenario where Atlanta does not go for him because of that qualifying offer. Sean Manaea, left-hand pitcher, 3 years, $60 million is the projection. I like the idea of signing him, but there's a qualifying offer. We'll see what happens. I think his stuff has been really good. He wasn't great in the postseason. He looked really good down the stretch. He made some mechanical tweaks. I just don't know if I am down with giving up the draft picks to sign him, given that he is already in his 30s. And he turns 33 in February. The Braves have not really wanted to commit to a pitcher, to a free agency pitcher in their 30s, unless it is a guy, a veteran on what is probably his last deal, who's expected to be a 4 or 5, right? Charlie Morton, they tried Brandon McCarthy, Cole Hamels, that didn't work out, obviously, but going for those veteran guys at the very back of the rotation there as just veteran depth, that's all they've really done. And it feels like he's going to get paid more. I think that projection's a little bit low. I don't know if he'll get 4 years. I think somebody will pony up the money for him. That's probably not going to happen. Teoscar Hernandez. This is really interesting to me. Teoscar Hernandez is definitely a guy that has a lot of power, did really well with the Dodgers, 33 homers. I feel like defensively he mostly played left field. I feel like he was fine. 122 OPS plus since the start of 2018. He's been consistent. He did get a qualifying offer. So that is the question there. He's projected also 3 years, $60 million. He's got good speed. He just doesn't steal a lot. But this is something where I don't know, again, because of the qualifying offer, if Atlanta goes for Teoscar Hernandez. I think Atlanta would have been in on this were it not for the qualifying offer. And they have shown that they are nervous about qualifying offer guys. Sonny Gray was a guy last year who they were reportedly interested in. He got a qualifying offer, and then we never got any other news about them being interested in Sonny Gray after that. Stay tuned, by the way, for tomorrow's show. I do think there is a path to acquire Sonny Gray in a trade. I don't think you see Teoscar Hernandez. To me, he feels like the runner-up to Anthony Santander, although I do think he'll end up being better than Santander because he offers more defense, he offers more speed, things like that. In just a minute, let's get to the back half of this list. We're going to go a little bit faster, but we're going to get guys who Atlanta has already expressed interest in or who make a lot of sense for the Braves. We'll do that next right here on Braves Today. Welcome back to Braves Today. Lindsey Crosby talking about the top 50 free agents and who Atlanta should be interested in. And the first guy here I want to get to in the second half of the show is a guy Atlanta should be interested in. Left-hander Yusei Kikuchi. This is something here, was traded to the Astros. He's projected for 3 years and $60 million. And this is a scenario where you saw the Astros make a similar adjustment to Yusei Kikuchi like what Atlanta does. We talked about this in the bullpen show about how Atlanta likes to have a dude, if it's your best pitch, even if it's a non-fastball, throw it more, right? Pierce Johnson, ramp up that curveball usage. Charlie Morton, ramp up the curveball usage. With the Astros, he virtually stopped throwing his curveball and he dramatically increased using his slider. Ground ball rate went up, hard hit rate went down, legitimately looks good, has strikeout potential, doesn't walk a ton of guys. I feel like this is a scenario where Atlanta's rotation for next year does not project to have any lefties outside of Chris Sale, okay? Because Lopez, righty, Schwellenbach, righty, just about all the rest of your prospect guys, or your veteran, Koenig, Ian Anderson, Smith-Shawver, Waldrop, Bryce Elder, all those guys, they're all right-handed, right? Having at least two lefties in your rotation is useful, because if you have a team that struggles against lefties, you can stack the rotation and throw multiple against them. Even your top prospects. I think it was your 2023 draft. I don't believe had any left-handed pitchers in it at all, right? The Braves have really invested in right-handed pitching. This year was a little bit different in the draft, but for the most part, they've been staying away. No, I'm sorry. You had Mitch Ferris and Raleigh Frey last year. You had two day three guys who were lefties. Most of your top pitching prospects are right-handed, though. So even if you call somebody up, you call up a Drew Hackenberger, Lucas Braun, whoever it might be, they're also right-handed. So Yusei Kikuchi makes sense to me. And the fact that Houston targeted him via trade, Houston's GM, Dana Brown, used to work for Alex Anthopoulos in Atlanta, tells me they probably saw some of the same stuff that Atlanta would see about ways to improve Yusei Kikuchi. I feel like this is legitimately a possibility, and I want you to watch for the potential of going out to get Yusei Kikuchi. He's been inconsistent in the past. If you feel like last year's version down the stretch was the actual Yusei Kikuchi and not the dude who gave up too many homers with Toronto, things like that, or the guy who struggled with the Mariners when he first came over, then you could see Atlanta go for Yusei Kikuchi, and I think it'd be a good idea to get a lefty in the rotation. Number 13, Christian Walker, first baseman, qualifying offer, doesn't make a lot of sense. Move on from there. Tanner Scott, left-handed reliever. We've talked on here before. You lost Joe Jimenez. Raisel Iglesias has one more year on his deal. There is a path to signing a top-tier reliever to be your primary setup man to Iglesias and then take over as closer after a season. Now, does Atlanta win for Taylor Scott or for Tanner Scott? $14 million AAV on a 4-year, $56 million deal feels a little bit low. I feel like he might get a little bit more, but fantastic velocity. He hits 97 miles an hour on the fastball. It's the average there. Hard slider. I love hard sliders. Closer to 90, you can get that slider, the better. MLB Trade Rumors actually talks about the Raisel Iglesias deal as a good comp. 4 years, $58 million. I like Tanner Scott. I would be willing to do that deal to give you not only the bullpen help you need, but also a future closer for future seasons. That's another AA move. Although typically they like to trade for those guys versus sign them in free agency. You know, again, you traded for Pierce Johnson, you traded for Joe Jimenez, you traded for Iglesias, you traded for Bummer. Four of your top five relievers next year, as of now, were all trade acquisitions and not signings. So they may do this, but he does fit the profile of somebody Atlanta would be interested in. Luis Severino, 3 years, $51 million. Qualifying offer. There's a couple reasons I don't think Luis Severino makes sense. It was a good year for him. It was a platform year. He doesn't necessarily... Even then, the strikeout rate was only 21%. There's a lot of things to be concerned about. I don't think Severino is going to be the guy for Atlanta. Same thing, Jurickson Profar. Predicted for 3 years, $45 million. I don't necessarily expect Jurickson Profar to be the signing for Atlanta. I just feel like more people are, like, there's more teams that are going to be interested in him. He did not get a qualifying offer. That is a perk here. He'll be 32 in February. I don't know if the Braves make a move here, although I could see them being interested. Nathan Eovaldi at number 17. This is the one you absolutely have to watch because we have reports, according to Mark Bowman of MLB.com, the Braves are interested in Nathan Eovaldi. He declined his $20 million player option with the Rangers. This is something, he's 34 years old. You can probably get him a 2-3 year deal. He's had two Tommy John surgeries in the past, which is a bit nerve-wracking, right? Does make you a little bit nervous. But he very good command. He misses bats still. He's performed well, not great, but he still averages 95 miles an hour on his fastball, throws a splitter, very accomplished in the postseason. Did not get a qualifying offer. He's already had one. The Red Sox gave him one last time he was in free agency. So you could see 2 years with a club option. You could see maybe 3 years. I do legitimately think Atlanta is going to be in on Nathan Eovaldi. Okay. This feels to me, I think this has legs. Obviously, Mark Bowman didn't hear anything about this from the Braves front office. They don't do that. But obviously, they probably heard about it from the agent side. This is something, Strider is not going to be ready for opening day. Freed's probably gone. Morton may or may not come back. If he comes back, I wouldn't expect to be more than $10 million on a number to be a number five. I legitimately think Nathan Eovaldi could be a 2 or 3 year signing here. You can probably give him a little over $20 million a year. I'd expect a club option on the end of that. Atlanta can choose to exercise or not. Moving down the list a little bit quicker here, Jeff Hoffman. Relievers are so tough to predict. I don't think Atlanta goes for, I don't necessarily know if they believe enough for Jeff Hoffman to beat the other teams in free agency looking for him. Philly's going to want to bring him back. I do think that he has broken out as a setup guy. I don't know if they see him as a future closer or not. I think that will determine if you sign a high leverage arm. It has to be a guy that you think can be the closer once Raisel Iglesias' contract is done. I don't know if they believe in Jeff Hoffman. So for that reason, I'm a little hesitant. Tyler O'Neill, outfielder, drafted by the Mariners, traded to St. Louis, then traded away and goes to Boston. Tons of home runs, struck out a bunch, got hurt a lot. He fits Atlanta in a couple ways as far as the power potential, things like that. But he's been on the IL 14 times. Now, only one of them was for more than a month. It's a Max Fried situation, right? Goes to the IL a lot. Most of them are short-term things. But because of that, he's just not available a ton. There's no qualifying offer here. I know Christian is big on Tyler O'Neill's option for the Braves. I think it's possible, but I don't know if it's likely. I do think Atlanta brings in an outfielder this offseason. I don't know if it's anybody more than a one-year deal, because you'll have Acuna back at some point in time, and you'll have Harris, and you'll have two guys, and three, you can compete for left field. I do think O'Neill's an interest. I don't want to set the market for him because of the injury issues. Now, the Braves maybe aren't necessarily worried about that. Feels odd to me. Gleyber Torres can't play shortstop anymore. He's one of the better offensive second basemen. He can't play short. He really can't cover third. And so this is something where his year was better than it looks like because he had a really bad first couple months. But you have a second baseman. You're not going to sign him as a utility guy because he can't play short. Doesn't make a lot of sense here, right? Clay Holmes, Carlos Estevez. It's really hard to talk about closers and relievers in general, so I'm going to skip some of this. Matthew Boyd. I'm really interested in Matthew Boyd. He's been very injury prone, but he also looked very good this year with the Guardians. So this is another lower cost pitching signing. You could see the Braves make. I'm curious to see exactly how this might, how his market's going to shape up. Workload questions are going to be a thing for you, right? Atlanta's not been scared about that. They went out and got Lopez. They got Chris Sale. Workload questions, they were not worried about it. It worked out in both situations. Eventually, this isn't always going to work out, right? This will eventually not work. But it's worked so far, and I think the story here is Atlanta's not scared of workload concerns like a lot of other guys are scared of work, or a lot of teams are scared of workload concerns because they feel better about their ability to evaluate it. Jock Peterson doesn't make a lot of sense, doesn't really play outfield that much anymore. He's a right-handed hitting designated hitter at this point. Doesn't make a lot of sense with your current roster, as much as I'd love to have the vibes back, doesn't make sense. Andrew Heaney is another pitcher that, similar to Nathan Eovaldi, I expect Atlanta to be interested in. I don't think they see him as postseason starter caliber, which is the question there. I think that's going to limit it a little bit. But I think probably the one team that values him as a number three and pays him like that gets the signing. The proposal here is 2 years, $24 million. We'll see what happens. I don't necessarily know if I buy that. Moving down some of the list a little bit here, you got Frankie Montas, another mid-rotation to back-end guy. I do feel like Atlanta's going to shoot a little bit higher for somebody as far as performance, as far as longevity, as far as workload is concerned. So not sure Frankie Montas. Nick Pivetta, I wanted Nick Pivetta before the qualifying offer, right? The qualifying offer, I think, is really going to screw up his thing. At this point, he might just accept the qualifying offer, take the $21 million, and then go to free agency again next year, because this dude has flashed being amazing. That fastball is great. He also gives up a ton of homers, right? And so you got to figure that out. Nick Martinez also got a qualifying offer. I would have been interested in Nick Martinez were it not for the qualifying offer. So that kind of leads you to some issues there. Going down the list, Danny Jansen. I think if you sign a catcher in free agency, it's bringing back Travis d'Arnaud. I don't think you go and you sign an outside catcher, you bring back Travis d'Arnaud, or you go with Chadwick Tromp and or Drake Baldwin. So it doesn't seem like it's a big thing there. Skipping over Jose Quintana, I don't have any sort of veteran starter. He'll turn 36 before next season. He's that kind of back-end number five thing. Charlie Morton, you probably prefer to bring Charlie Morton back at $10 million versus whatever Jose Quintana might get. Michael Conforto, this is interesting. Hit 20 homers, but he had a right hamstring strain in like mid-May, and he was really good before it, and he was really good after he had some time to recover from it. Conforto's interesting. I think the Braves would be interested. He gives you a lefty bat. He's a corner outfield guy, obviously, only, but would help you cover left field. I think they'd be interested. I don't know if they do it, right? Max Scherzer, maybe he's your veteran in place of Charlie Morton. He's been more injury prone. He was good when he was on the mound. He just, if the deal is cheap enough, maybe he's the veteran you bring in on a one-year deal. A.J. Minter, I've already talked about. I think Atlanta brings back A.J. Minter. I think they would be smart to try to do that. It's possible they think he could grow into the closer role after Iglesias leaves. But either way, I don't know how they're going to treat A.J. Minter, what kind of deal he's going to get. Paul Goldschmidt, a lot of reasons it doesn't make sense. Let's move on. Kyle Higashioka, a catcher. I know he raked against Atlanta in the postseason. He'll be 35. Again, another veteran catcher. I think you'll bring back d'Arnaud before you go after Kyle Higashioka. Walker Buehler. This is really interesting. I thought he would get a qualifying offer, and he did not. This might be something where he takes a short-term 1 or 2 year deal, rebuilds some value, and then goes back to free agency again. Is Atlanta interested in a 1 or 2 year deal for Walker Buehler? Projection here, 1 year, $15 million. I think if he's the Walker Buehler you saw in the World Series, you're okay with that. If he's the Walker Buehler you saw in September, he's not the guy you want, right? In August or September. We'll see what happens there. Kirby Yates, Atlanta did not bring him back for just a couple million. He 33-34 on saves. He got plenty of punchies. The velocity's not really there, but he got plenty of whiffs. He'll be 38 this spring. I don't think Atlanta's going to go for a guy that old. So I don't see this happening. I do see Atlanta grabbing a former closer to be a reliever. It's what they did with Kirby Yates, right? Like they want a guy, if your back end is all down because they pitched two straight days, Kirby Yates was the guy who would come in and get the save in 2023. I do think they need that role in the bullpen. I don't think they go back to Kirby Yates to get it. Michael Soroka, he really struggled in the rotation for Chicago, right? After the trade, he was bad. They moved him to the bullpen, and you know what? He was good in the bullpen. 90, almost 95 on the fastball, 13 strikeouts and 2 walks down the stretch. Did have some walk issues, but even then, striking out lots of guys. This is something where do they bring him back as a reliever with the hopes of eventually building him back into the rotation? Maybe. I do think this is a sneaky grab your guy back, bring him back with the understanding that, hey, we're going to put you in the bullpen, but you're going to have the ability to grow back into a starter if you can show you deserve it. So do definitely watch Michael Soroka. I do like the idea that he might come back, even if I don't know if it happens or not. We're going to skip some of these relievers here. Andrew Kittredge is 35 or so. Looked good for the Cardinals last year, but he's had some injury concerns. I think he's fine. I don't necessarily think they'll go. Again, it's so hard to do relievers on this. Kyle Gibson always takes tons of innings, right? Is it possible if the veteran signing you do for the back end of your rotation, especially with the Strider news, it could be Charlie Morton. It could be a guy like Kyle Gibson. This absolutely could happen. I just don't know who it's going to be. Tommy Canley, reliever, but something like that. He throws that changeup more so than anybody. That's a Braves thing. Just keep throwing that best pitch of yours, whether or not it's a fastball. He threw 61 consecutive changeups in the postseason. If that doesn't scream Atlanta Braves pitching usage, I don't know what does. Ha-Sung Kim is the one that half of the predictions in this piece were Atlanta. They said 1 year, $12 million. I do think it'll be more than that. He's expected to potentially miss some of the beginning of the season because of that shoulder surgery. But listen, the power's not great. So that's a little bit outside of the usual profile for Atlanta. But he walks a lot. He can steal plenty. He doesn't strike out a ton. He's very good defensively and can play multiple positions. He can play third. He can play second. He can play short. I do think this is an interesting option here. The downside to Ha-Sung Kim, he is now a Scott Boras client. He swapped to Scott Boras in October. I don't know if that completely does stop the Braves from going after Ha-Sung Kim or not, simply because, again, they've never really been interested in Scott Boras clients, and they've never been super aggressive in Scott Boras clients. I legitimately do think that rather than a Ha-Sung Kim, you may see something where, like, they bring in a Paul DeJong, who hit righties. He batted 237 against righties. And then they'll look at Orlando Arcia and say, hey, your 24 was just dreadful all around. But in 23, you hit lefties really well. You batted 302 against lefties. You batted 50 points better against lefties than righties in 23. Paul DeJong bats 40 points better against righties than lefties. Grab Paul DeJong for a couple million, platoon the two of them, knowing that when you have the almost inevitable Ozzie Albies injury at this point, and they're not his fault. He gets hit by a pitch. He does a tag and his wrist bends the wrong way. It's not his fault, but he gets hurt a lot. Do you just say, okay, Paul DeJong, you're now the starter? Is that something that happens? It's entirely possible. I like the idea of Ha-Sung Kim a lot. I don't like the fact he's a Boras client. We'll see if Atlanta goes outside of type on this in a way that they have not done before. We are over time on the show, but the last couple, Shane Bieber, Tommy John, he's out most of the year. I don't know if Atlanta's willing to sign him to just a 1-year deal, hoping to get him back. He probably wants the one-year deal to get back on the market. I think Atlanta only does this if it's a two-year deal or it's a club option with a large salary in year two. I don't think it's likely. Verlander, Justin Verlander, this is that same veteran starter thing we've talked about with Kyle Gibson, with Scherzer, with Morton. One of those situations. Tomoyuki Sugano, I know absolutely nothing about him. A pitcher in Japan, I believe he's in his mid-30s. Don't know enough here to speak intelligently on this. We're going to move on. David Robertson, another reliever here. Again, relievers are so hard to predict. Another Asian arm here. Shinsuke Ogasawara. Again, don't know a lot about these Japanese pitchers. Have not looked at this yet. Going to move on from there. Harrison Bader, center fielder. You don't need one of those. Jared Kelnick's your backup center fielder. AA told us that. Spencer Turnbull. I like Spencer Turnbull. He's a guy, he can be long relief. He can step into the rotation. I have been a fan of Spencer Turnbull. He missed the last couple months of the season. He came back from Tommy John, but he had a lat strain last year. I like Spencer Turnbull, and I think he could be a guy you see the Braves go after simply because if you think Grant Holmes is going to be a starter, you stick Spencer Turnbull in that long relief thing and have him make spot starts. I like the choice here, so we'll see what happens with this. This has been Braves Today. Long episode for Thursday, November 7th. Remember, we're doing this tomorrow, but with trades. We're going to look at some of the options for guys, both position players and pitchers, that the Braves may be trading for. Until next time, this has been Braves Today.